Jeannie Mock is our guest on a Sunday night. Jeannie is one of those who believes that religion should be about reconciliation. So much of our life these days, we see religion as a source of tension, even of terror. Jeannie is one of those who also puts her beliefs into action. For many years, she's been an activist on the multicultural arena in Australia and also within her own Christian community in Brisbane's Fortitude Valley. Jeannie Mock, welcome to Sunday Night.
Thank you.
Jeannie Mock, you once described evangelical Protestantism as a touch waspish, and part of your mission in life has been to reform that.
Indeed. I think, you know, Australia is now the most multicultural nation in the world, and so we need to take note of that. If you continue that pathway, a lot of churches will end up being like the cathedrals in England, you know, dinosaurs visited by tourists, and hardly any, believers in meetings. So if you want to be inclusive, one needs to change one's modus operandi.
What do you mean by waspish? That's not just a statement about colour and shape, is it?
Well, churches that, will be accepting, as Australia has always been in a sense, but saying that the dominant culture, the dominant practices are based on, traditional English, Anglo-Saxon customs, traditions, the religion. And so that if one wants to come into the organization or church or community, then one has to assimilate. One has to lose one's cultural distinctives so that one has to fit in. And, quite like I look at myself when I grew up in my early days, it was very colonial Malaysia. And I think now I'm an English clone. So that I am, because apparently when I was very young, I spoke Cantonese fluently. My mother was Cantonese. But, you know, to get ahead, you had to be very, very English. And so I gave up a lot of my language and mastered English. And I have a master's in English.
Jeannie Mock, when you first, let's talk about those early days when you grew up in Malaysia, you come to Australia as a young person, and you settle into a life in academia. But you begin to understand, and perhaps you could tell us the story of how you and your husband began to look for a place to worship and a way of expressing yourself in a local community that led you to be pioneers of change in a way.
Yes. Well, we came to Australia about 28 years ago. And in our earlier days, we had gone to New Zealand and I did my master's there and went back to Malaysia and, were very idealistic that we were going to change the world. And so, the political situation in Malaysia, and we were in the hotbed of politics, and it still is that way, teaching at the University of Malaya. And, thinking that everyone is born equal and that we should have equal rights. And that has never been the case, after independence in Malaysia. So after a while, we decided, this is not the place for us, not the place for, to bring up children. So we thought, Australia, this is a new frontier, and this is, at least we have a chance, for equality to be included, to be a first-class citizen. So when we came over here, I was a traditional Catholic, and my husband was Buddhist, and was newly, I think just before we arrived, he became a Christian. And so we looked around for a place that we could go to, and we went into a Catholic church in the western suburbs. And we found that that was not quite the place for us, because I think the Catholic church, assumes that how to do things the Catholic way. And we were eager beavers, very young and eager to learn more about God. And so we were looking around for something. And so we had a little bit of a journey. And finally we decided, we were asked to start to work in Chinatown, where at that time it was quite a dreadful place with the triads and drugs and whatever else. And after a while we said, we'll do that. We'll start to work in Chinatown, perhaps draw in all the Chinese migrants. But it didn't work that way. Lots of different people from different cultures kept coming in, and we wanted, you know, it was hard to say, go away, you know, this is not what we want to do. And after a while, there was a growing realization that, you know, Chinatown being the crossroads of all cultures, and when migrants come, they go looking for familiar faces, looking for traditional foods, and where do they find them? In Chinatown. So when different people started coming into our, you know, we organized dinners for Christians and whatever, and it started having elements of manifesting elements of a church, and we decided, well, obviously...
Now we should say, before we get onto the manifesting elements of a church, that at this stage, your presence in Chinatown was expressed by running a restaurant. You were actually running a restaurant.
Yes. We came in as business migrants. And, you know, you have to bring a certain amount of money, you have to start something. And so we were thinking, well, if we started a restaurant, we'd always have food to eat. If everything failed, you know, we'd never go hungry. And so based on that philosophy, we started a restaurant in Tuong and then one in Chinatown. And so we used that, you know, for dinners and whatever else, and invited guest speakers, and the church grew out of that.
Tell us what the character of the church is now, and how you've given expression both to your Christian faith and your commitment to multiculturalism.
Well, we have about, you know, over 600 people in the church, and from so many different nations. When we touch about 40 nations or so, we stopped counting. And, you know, you can't just say we've got Africans in there, because they quite object to that. You know, we've got people from Nigeria, we've got people from Sudan, we've got people from Burundi, Congo, Sierra Leone, places like that. So that's just the Africans. Then we've got Burmese refugees that have come in, the Kachins, and others, you know, from China, from Malaysia. But strangely, because there are so many different people from different nations, our majority, about 30% over, is still Australian, Caucasian. And that's an interesting factor. So with all these different peoples coming in, it was, how can we be totally inclusive? Because I believe that, you know, politically, if you want equality, you need to be able to have that kind of ethos, even in church. You've got to have where everybody feels a first-class citizen. And you go to some churches, and I saw that when I went into the Catholic Church. We were sort of fringe dwellers. You know, people didn't quite know at that stage. This was, don't forget, 20-something years ago, even before the Commonwealth Games, that they didn't know how to respond to us. There was, I suppose, some anxiety. Did we speak English? You know, and it was interesting that when there was collection on Sunday, we would never be past the plate. Maybe they thought we were refugees and that we didn't have any money to give, and it could have been embarrassing. And so we thought that was very strange. So with all these different experiences in mind, and the fact that we had come from a country where we never had that sort of equality, we thought, how do we create an organization that, you know, would be totally inclusive, that nobody would feel that, oh, I've got to give up, you know, my cultures. You know, that melting pot theory that so many different people practice in America, did it for so many years. You've got to melt away your cultural distinctives and, in fact, become, you know, they talk about that homogenous stew. You've got to become like everybody else. And that wasn't quite our strategy. We thought we'd go for the salad bowl, you know, where you'd have all the different colors, and as in your salads, you know, the olives still remain black and you know, greens and whatever in their glory. But the thing that would hold us together would be the dressing. And the dressing would be our Jesus culture, which was, you know, the Word and the Bible and teachings. And in that sense, that those principles would be the non-negotiables. But as we know, you know, when different cultures come in, we're always evolving, right? And so some sort of fusion would occur along the way, yeah.
Well, let's have a listen to an example of that fusion, because you've brought along with you some musical examples from the way a multicultural and multicolored church operates. And musically, the expression has come out of your own community. And here's an example of the folk from Brisbane, from Jeannie Mock's congregation. And well, Jeannie, what are we going to hear? Give us a first example.
Well, what we've tried to do is produce multicultural worship. We have a combined celebration once a month where, you know, all the, we've got different services. They all come together. It's getting harder and harder because it's getting too big. But we try to sing in different languages. So because of the, you know, Africans there, we throw in a bit of Swahili. And there's Chinese, there's Mandarin or Cantonese, there's English, of course, and then Spanish, because we've got a, you know, fairly significant Latino component. And so the music team is has become, you know, has been extended greatly. And they sing in different languages, and the congregation is encouraged to sing along. So there could be a certain song where, you know, different choruses would be in different languages. But what we decide to do is to then produce, you know, worship that would reflect the different languages, and but they would be contemporary, because we have quite a lot of young people, and you know they're not going to be sitting down all the time listening to traditional hymns, so it had to have that contemporary flavor. So I would like, you know, to start off perhaps with a song that is really a symbol of what we're trying to do. It says, just one touch of God's glory in people's lives. And one doesn't have to be, you know, we have a community center, we have all sorts of people coming in, Muslims and everything else, but just a touch of you know, God's glory in their lives transforms them through kindness and love and mercy and peace.
Just one touch.
Just one touch of your glory, Lord. Just one glimpse of your majesty. Just one dip in your river, Lord. Just one taste of your goodness and mercy.
Just One Touch, music of the International City Church in Brisbane, and our guest, Jeannie Mock. Jeannie, part of that church experience is a growing experience of practical multiculturalism. How did you get from a community involvement, which was largely locally church-based, into the wider field of multiculturalism? Because you've actually taken up the cudgels, being involved with government and the city.
In a very big way, yes. You know, initially we found that because we were a church in Chinatown, people would come to us for help. You know, they link church with assistance. And we had people coming in from, apparently, you know, from the airport. They'd see church and they come in, International City Church. And they'd say, can you find me a job? I need accommodation or whatever else. Then we'd have people coming to us in absolute distress because somebody had died and they didn't know what to do. If there was an accident, you're a new migrant, what do you do in such circumstances? You know, you don't have your temples, you don't have your whatever else. Could we do something? So we started doing free funerals. And then, you know, it was the jobs, the funerals, the accommodation, the handouts and whatever else. But we realized after a while that it was impossible to do it and you know, to get our volunteers to keep doing all the time and putting hands in the pocket. And so when we incorporated it in 96, when we decided, well, we've got to do it and use the resources that the government does provide. And so now we access funding from federal, state, and city council. So I've established this multicultural community center. I'm a volunteer director there. And we have a migrant one-stop shop. You need to be practical. You can't just say, I'll pray for you. It's good, you know, if you can pray for a person. But I think of myself as well when I migrated. And you run around madly, you know, setting up business. Now, we had the money and we had the language. But even then, you're running around madly trying to find out, you know, what to do and how to get things going and where to find things. And so we said, let's be practical. Now you've got, you know, Australia with its policy of bringing in about 13 over 14,000 refugees and your normal migrants that come in on family reunion on a professional basis. But everybody still needs a helping hand. And so what we've done is that we've set this up. We've got a refugee officer now funded by federal government. And with this migrant one-stop shop, I've got two employment officers as well as a course coordinator. We run courses, Certificate 3 in aged care, Certificate 3 in child care. We've been fairly strategic because that's where the jobs are. And so we in our building, we have a commercial kitchen. So in the past, I've run, you know, cafe operations, a Certificate 2 in hospitality. I've managed to get funding to buy sewing machines. And because so many of the older women, mature age women, you know, it's harder for them to master language. And most of them never enter the workforce anyway. So we've brought them in, taught them sewing. I mean, they know the basics of sewing, but we always make sure that they get some certification, you know, a TAFE course or whatever. And we teach them how to set up business.
You've projected yourself into the community in rather a forthright fashion, though. You are on the Queensland Psychology Board, the Royal Children's Hospital,
yes.
District Health Council, the YWCA Board, the Premier's Council for Women. This speaks of somebody who believes that their Christianity has actually got to be integrated with the wider community, and it's not something that works in isolation.
Of course. You know, you cannot... I think the days of being an ivory tower are long gone. You've really got to be, you know, somebody in community. How are you going to influence policy? How are you going to make sure that a voice is there representing people who, you know, where English is a second language or even third language and can't speak for themselves? So, like, I'm on the multicultural committee of the Queensland State Library, and so that's a voice saying, can you make sure that we have, you know, newspapers and magazines in different languages? Can you ensure that if you've got librarians, you know, and in city council libraries, that they're multilingual, so that I know that with our state library, if we've got over 200,000 volumes in different languages, what good is that, you know, if I can't access it? That's just one example. At the hospital, you know, do we have, you know, interpreters on hand? Forms, are they easy to fill? So these sorts of things have got to be looked at. I know that lots of people have goodwill. I think Australia is fabulous in terms of we've got such a good track record. And I used to sit on the Refugee Resettlement Advisory Council to the federal government. And we go to extreme lengths to make sure that when we bring in our refugees and those on a humanitarian visa, that they settle down ASAP, they get their hours of English. And lots of people have so much goodwill. But in practical terms, how do we make sure that this goodwill translates into practical assistance?
You paint a quite a positive and idealistic picture, but there are dark corners here. We only have to remember that in your own community there, Pauline Hanson a few years ago was something of a challenge. How real are those dark corners and the Hanson example, for example? How did that affect you?
Very real. I became an activist because of... Pauline. You know, I was outraged. You see, when you come in from, you know, and you're comfortable yourself, most people don't make waves, you know, and if you face that touch of racism or whatever it is, and then you say, well, let it go, I'll just go away. But when she became so vocal and we found that, you know, quite a number of Christian churches were supportive of her ideology, that I was outraged. And I thought, no, I can't sit still. You know, this was all do or die. We were at the crossroads. And therefore, that's where, you know, I thought I needed to get activated, because there were lots of stories coming in, anecdotal evidence of, you know, old people in suburbs, you know, people throwing rocks at them, and a lot of name-calling, and a lot of young people, Muslim women in hijab, you know, terrified about going outside, and therefore something had to be done. So, of course, there are dark corners, but one needs to be an optimist. You know, there's always the light at the end of the tunnel.
You're on Sunday Night. We're with Jeannie Mock of the International City Church and the Multicultural Community Centre based in Fortitude Valley in Brisbane. Jeannie Mock, let's have another piece of music and another example of multiculturalism. You speak of your own Chinese background, and Chinese Christianity has become a quite significant element, particularly in evangelical circles in Australia. So an example from your Chinese musical heritage, perhaps.
Yes, yes. You know, lots of Chinese students come into the country, lots of Chinese migrants. I think Queensland is the key destination for the Taiwanese population. And so, you know, we try to be very, very inclusive. And these kids that want contemporary music, there's nothing going here in churches. The ethnic churches tend to be very, very, very traditional, you know, with old hymns and whatever else. And therefore, we just produced a CD. We've got a singer, Joshua Chang, in our church. And in fact, this song, Under the Moonlight, I have my Winnie, my daughter-in-law, she's a vet, and she sings as well. But we make sure that we have a lot of song fests, you know, and that for the Mooncake Festival, for Chinese New Year, there's drama, there's music, but it draws in hundreds of young people because they can relate to that, and it's modern. So this latest CD that we've produced in Chinese, I think it's the first Christian worship, modern CD in Australia.
Under the Moonlight.
诺不变，要持守最永恒的爱。流过的泪，反正了我们之间写下的每一页。我们的约定，在月光下的约定。持守的永恒的爱，流过的泪，见证着我们之间写下的每一页。我们的约定，在月光下的约定。
Under the Moonlight, music of the International City Church, the Chinese expression of Christianity in Australia today. Jeannie Mok is our guest. Jeannie Mok, let's talk a little bit about another aspect of your work, that is with our own Indigenous culture and your concern for Aboriginal women, and particularly the way in which their lives have been impacted by a radically modernising society. How does Christianity speak to them, and what particularly are you involved with in working with Aboriginal women?
Well, I believe that if you can't be a Christian and not believe in reconciliation. And I find with a lot of the migrants who come in, I used to think this was none of my business. You know, this happened a long, long time ago, and it's really a black-white thing, and we're just coming in now. But that's not quite the case. I heard this argued a long, long some time ago, that in fact, you know, we're all part of that continuum of invasion. That this land, we need to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land. We need to acknowledge the fact that, you know, gross injustices were perpetrated against the Indigenous population. And that so if we want to talk about unity, we want to talk about peace and love and God's grace and things like that, put our money where our mouths are. You know, you need to be involved in issues like this, and you can't say it's none of my business. So I've always been involved in reconciliation. I've seen that this is a key thing, and therefore, you know, it was extraordinary. It was an extraordinary experience when Rudd took office, and he started off on the right footing, which was to say sorry. And so given the fact that, you know, I was at pains to understand more about the Indigenous experience and to know the history, that and I taught a bit of history when I was teaching at the Brisbane Boys College in another lifetime, I brought in Aboriginal speakers and activists, and this led to becoming friends with quite a lot of Aboriginal people. And I have I try to have an annual art show to bring in Aboriginal artists together with all the others. And as a result of that, I was asked to write about the stories of women who had grown up in a reservation in Cherbourg in Queensland.
And this is an interesting characteristic of the work you're doing. It's not simply you doing things for Aboriginal women, it's you actually facilitating their capacity to tell their own stories, which seems
That's
to be an
right.
important part of what you're saying, that this is about
yes.
working with rather than doing for.
That's right. That's why I've written about four or five books, and these ones have been funded by the state government, and which is really, you know, for people to tell their story. And when I talk to them, I interview them, many of them cry because they didn't realise that their stories were of any value. And so you can see that even as, you know, they see themselves in print, that people are reading their stories, like Sherbrooke Dorm Girls, you know, a lot of the ladies that were so horrendously treated when, you know, as young women, they were 12, 13, they were sent out, you know, to work. They were raped. They came back, had their babies, sent out to work again and came back, you know, and having different babies and not knowing the fathers and that sort of thing. They would weep, and I would weep with them because their stories were so painful. But it was a sort of catharsis, realizing that, you know, finally that they were going to be heard, finally that somebody was going to allow them to be heard by, you know, others in the community, wider community.
Is there still a legacy of racism in Australia from those days?
I think yes. You know, I think you'd have racism everywhere. You have racism. I left Malaysia because of racism, you know, and I think Australia, because of its you know, legal systems, at least you've got recourse, you know. And I think we've had fairly sympathetic governments after the dismantling of the White Australia policy. And I would think Australia's track record, I mean, you look at France and you look at, you know, United States and UK. That's why I say this is Christianity's last stand in Australia. You either make it or break it here. You know, if you talk about, you know, Jesus being peace and love and the unifying factor, let's see it happen in the churches, because it hasn't worked elsewhere, has it?
Let's have another piece of music to give an expression to that. Dali Gloria. Jeannie, just tell us a little bit about it.
Well, you know, the fact that when you have different cultures coming in, and some cultures like to party, and, you know, and especially the young people, they love dancing around and everything else. And so what we try to do is to ensure that when we do have our celebrations, it is a celebration. You can dance, you can clap, you can sing, and you know, we use the rhythms of the different cultures. And with this Latino one, the Latino beat is there for sure. So you know, it's really, you know, giving God glory, but then while doing so, you're having a fantastic time.
Come on, everybody.
Oh, way, oh, way, oh.
It's time to praise the Lord, yeah.
Give Him praise. Glory and honor and power and praise. Glory and honor and power and praise. Glory and honor and power and praise. Forever.
See? Come on. We've only just started tonight. Side to side, come on, this is a party, we're celebrating. I want to see everybody dancing tonight, come on. Let's dance before the Lord, all you people. Shout out to God, the voice of triumph, come on.
Oh, way, oh, way, oh. Oh, way, oh, way, oh. Oh, way, oh, way, oh.
Let all Brisbane hear you tonight, come on.
Oh, way, oh, way, oh.
Praising the one true God, that's it.
Oh, way, oh.
Dali Gloria, music from the International City Church. Jeannie Mock is our guest on a Sunday night. Jeannie Mock, tell us a little now about the practical multiculturalism. You express it very well in a book that you've written called The Technicolor Faith, Building a Multicultural Church. This takes your multiculturalism out of the arena of state politics and national politics into the grassroots. We mentioned just before the music that there is a sort of legacy of racism in Australia. In some ways, it finds a residual place in some churches and other church congregations, or not so much the churches officially, but in people in those churches. How have you found the capacity to integrate the work of your international city church and your multicultural community centre with other local churches?
Well, I think, we're a cutting-edge church, and we see ourselves as even, forerunners, let alone pioneers, of what needs to be done. Because when you look at the mainstream churches, they're ethnic churches, aren't they? You know, Lutherans have got that German ancestry. The Anglican Church, British, Presbyterian, Scottish. And so unconsciously that when one walks into these sorts of things, you actually part and parcel of a cultural heritage that's inherent in that organization.
Well, you could even say that, for example, about the charismatic tradition, being principally American, in the sense Midwest American, yet you've chosen to work within the framework of the charismatic, the Pentecostal tradition.
No, but if you look at the history of Pentecostalism, there was a movement in England as well.
Oh, yes, I'm just speaking about in terms of the last 50 years, it's become very heavily influenced by American pop culture in particular, hasn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was influenced by Hillsong, Sydney.
But there nevertheless is a cultural style that is appropriate almost to every tradition, does adopt its cultural style, doesn't it?
It does. But one doesn't have to take all the excesses of, America. Yeah. Even though our English language has become so American and we've gone to West Coast English, haven't we? American English rather than British English. I mean, there's sorts of excesses there. But I do feel that one, whether you like it or not, you need to keep moving ahead of, you've got to move on. And therefore, you've got to adapt and take the best of all worlds.
Do you think there's something new emerging out of your experience, something you can share with others?
Yes. Being so aware of the role that we take, and we do believe, I do not use the word mandate lightly, that in fact it's a conscious decision and we're always doing things and testing them out, like having the whole structure. I mean, this is what the book was. It was written for a conference. We have a Synergy conference every year. That's our that really is our key conference, Synergy. We believe that you can bring all the different cultures together, and then come up with something extraordinarily vibrant, creative. And so we're trying to come up with an organizational structure and operations that really work, that everything that I've been talking about, about being inclusive, about making sure that you don't have tokenism, making sure that people, feel that I can't understand things, I can't belong here, I can't call this home, that all these things are eradicated. And also that part of a multicultural church ethos is also the very practical help that you go out looking for people. You're not like international churches that, we welcome people. No, they're welcome to come in. A multicultural church goes consciously looking for people that have just arrived and saying, hey, we're here. How can you fit in? How can we help with your integration?
Many people will speak of multicultural churches and they'll think of their own experience, perhaps in their own traditions, where they have different services for different ethnic communities. You're not talking about that, are you? You're talking about integration. That is, people need to actually share who they are. They don't worship separately under the same banner. Yeah. They actually share who they are.
There are different models, you know, that can be looked at. And I think for practical reasons that you find that a lot of international churches will have different groups meeting and having their own languages. But never the twain shall meet, you know. Occasionally they'll have the festivals, the food fairs. But to me, that's very spaghetti and dance, you know, the spaghetti and dance syndrome that we'll trot them out when we want that color, when we want that dancing. It's got to go beyond that surface. And you've got to be able to, you know, have a platform, I think, where people can come together. And so we have, you know, translations happening that we have, even in a, we have a first service which is in English, but translation is available. We always say, who needs translation? There's Mandarin or there's Cantonese or there's Spanish. In a second service, because it's a fairly large Chinese group, you know, about 160 to 200, we move around, you know, the ones who do teach and preach, and we may speak in English, but there's always translation. So we always say, don't let that be a barrier. Some weeks ago, we started translating. Somebody would sit with others into Kachin, which is, you know, one of the languages coming out from Burma.
You're on Sunday Night. Our guest is Jeannie Mok. Jeannie, we're rapidly running out of time. We've mentioned just some of the aspects of your life that that have taken you into a commitment to building a new Australia. You've mentioned about your church life. You've mentioned your work as a multicultural worker within the wider community of Queensland. We've got a new Prime Minister. Well, they've just celebrated a year in office. What are your hopes out of this government for multiculturalism as it's expressed? A Prime Minister who says he's a committed Christian, who's also a Queenslander, so you've got to have some sort of sympathy with him from your own perspective. And a fluent Mandarin speaker. Just finally, in winding up, what are your hopes for the church in Australia and your hopes for Australia as a community?
That we avoid, you know, the ethnic cleansings and religious, you know, blood baths. And as a result of that, you know, I've set up this college, International Christian College, under the Asian Pacific Institute. It's cross-cultural training. But I've written the certificate for and diploma in multicultural ministry, where, you know, we give out scholarships. 90% of our students are on scholarships, and they come in. And it's how to do things. You know, it really is a paradigm shift. It's got to be a heart change. And it's not that, oh, because of the demographics, you know, if we don't you know, if we don't include these people, we're going to eventually die off. That's not the reason. But to be able to see that this diversity, you know, it is rich, it's creative, it's productive, and it really is something that is at the very, you know, heart of I think, God's plan. He created Eden and looked at the diversity and said, boy, this is good. So I'm hoping that we really will be able to provide a model, you know, for the rest of the world, that in fact you can be the most multicultural nation in the world and that you still can live harmoniously, and that, you know, it's going to be a testimony of people, you know, who have endeavored to ensure that we have this kind of harmonious living where we can have our difference, we can have, you know, different philosophies and different religions and whatever, but we can still live together in peace.
Jeannie Mok, it's been great to have you on Sunday Night. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're going to finish with another example of the music of the International City Church at Fortitude Valley in Brisbane. This is a song called Miracle of Grace. Just tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, we have a guest singer there, Emma Castles. But you know, this miracle of grace, as I said, we need to have this sort of grace in you know, when we function daily, that to be gracious about each other. You know, there's so many things that if you want to get upset about, you can have a bone to pick, you know, with. But I think if we have that touch of grace, that can transform lives. And I think, you know, without the fact that, you know, God's grace was extended to us, and at Christmas, we're so close to Christmas, that grace came as a gift, that we need to be able to gift each other with grace.
Jeannie Mock, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Night.
Thank you.
Yeah. Jesus.